All right, so welcome everyone. Nice to see everyone, both here in person and online. So we're continuing with this exploration of Dharma in daily life, and this month focusing on communication, and how communication can be a way of really engaging with our practice in a real concrete way. So last talk, 2 weeks ago, I explored why speech as a focus area. You know, these elements which we explored, like being truthful, having something, the words being beneficial, the right timing, non-divisive and non-abusive, and not idle. I think it's helpful to, if you have the pause or enough space to focus on each of those elements, to kind of check to see how well they're landing, how well they're really held up in as you're speaking, what you're speaking from. But it's hard to keep track of all of those in the midst of a conversation when things are this back and forth dialogue. Let's say we want to say something difficult to someone, and we've gone through what we're going to say, gone through these different elements of wise speech, and we feel like, okay, it feels truthful, feels beneficial. You know, there's the right timing. You know, it's not creating any sense of division. It's not abusive. It's not idle. And so then I speak to that person, and we say it with wise speech. And then they respond to us. They say something back. Either they're reactive or they're responsive to it. And then we have to talk back to them. We have to have this back and forth. And it's a little awkward to say, wait, hang on a second. Let me go through my checklist. So okay, what am I going to say? Okay, that's truthful. I don't know if it's beneficial. You have to, it slows things down. You lose that spontaneity that we so much value in real life, real time conversations. So it's, and especially if things are very heated, very impassioned, it's hard to find that sense of spaciousness, that sense of perspective to really speak in this wise way. Talking with a partner, talking with your children, talking with a boss, employee, even a stranger. This communication really has this two-way process, this back and forth. Things are being said and then reacted to or responded to. And it happens so quickly in life. And of course, conversations can be a source of so much joy, so much connection, but also can be a source of so much harm, so much suffering, so much pain. And it's hard to keep wise speech when we're felt triggered, when we felt hurt in the midst of that. So tonight I want to offer a way of some ways simplifying or some ways finding the essence that we can use in the middle of a conversation to still hold these elements of wise speech. And we're talking about speech, communication, emails, texting, however you're communicating with another person. So we could take this list. I actually listed off six elements, and we could reframe them as three, as being truthful, coming from a place of kindness and non-harm. So that helps us be beneficial in our speech, help us have the right timing, help us to check to see if we're creating division, checking to see if there's an abusiveness quality. If we're coming from a non-harm place, a place of kindness, those tend to fall into place. And then meaningful, that the conversation has a way of connecting, of exploring something. It helps us with that idle part. We can even take these three elements and simplify even more into just two main things we can hold. I'm trying to find a way we can make wise speech very accessible in the midst of the dynamic nature of a conversation. When we're charged, when we're triggered, when the other person is having their own experience. Now, if we follow these, sometimes the rest of these elements just line up, if we have the intention of following wise speech. And in some ways, these are sort of a shortcut, or maybe what's the phrase we use these days, a hack. And it's really, the idea is to make it simple enough to keep us with us in the midst of a conversation. So the first one is to release your opinions and your position. To release your opinions and your position. And the second is to stay connected to your heart and your body. To have that sense of reference point as you're speaking. So let's explore these a little bit, because these are very interrelated and interdependent upon each other. And it's hard to really truly listen deeply if you have an opinion, when you have a position that you're holding on to. You can't let the other person really speak their mind or share their heart, because you're already kind of closed off to them. Releasing our opinions and our positions allows space, creates space for the heart to start to emerge. And then the kindness, the non-harm naturally flows from that. And before we actually explore these two elements tonight, I want to talk about listening itself. And we spoke about wise speech so much 2 weeks ago, but the other side of it is that aspect of receiving, of listening, of hearing. This is so essential for communication to work well, this back and forth exchange. And it's not guaranteed. I could say something and it's not really met, it's not really received or heard or interpreted the way that I meant to say it. Same thing with the other way. Hearing someone else's verbiage, someone else's writing, someone else's speech, I may not fully see or hear where they're actually coming from. So this, we almost say it's the wise speech is essential. And then what's this wise? How, is there something called wise listening? So I was doing a quick review of the suttas, and I saw references to listening well to the Dharma under listening. Listening well, receiving the Dharma, really exploring it, taking it on in a deep way. But I didn't find anything, I guess, that quick look about interpersonal listening. Interpersonal, receiving another person's perspective. Why speech is so prominent, like in the Eightfold Path, but where is this wise listening aspect? As I reflected on this, I realized that our whole meditative practice is training us in wise listening. Is to listen in a very immediate, direct way, to learn to let go of our opinions, our ideas, to actually make contact with something as simple as our breath, as a sensation. And that trains us to be able to make contact with these more complex, elaborate things like our mind stream, our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs. And externally, how we meet another person, how we actually receive who they are in that moment, how it's unfolding. So meditation develops this exquisite sensitivity, this ability to have that steady, non-judgmental, non-influential, not trying to change quality of attention. We simply meet the other person. Just how we meet our breath, how we meet a sensation. And we learn to make contact with life, with experience, with what it actually is, not our ideas of it, not our concepts of it. Years ago, I was teaching an intro to meditation class, and I gave the instructions on the first day about, okay, feeling the breath, sensing the breath. And this one student kept asking, so you want us to think about our breath? You want us to think about where the breath is and how it's, you know, how it's moving. And it was hard to reframe his perspective that it's not about thinking about the breath, but actually sensing it, actually feeling it. But yet this highlights such an important stage in our meditative development and practice, is when we learn the difference between our ideas of something and the actual experience of that thing. Because for a long time, we're really confused about those two. Our idea of the thing is the thing itself. That's how we hold it. That's how we relate to it. When we start to realize that the thought around it, the idea around it, the label, our history around it is what we've added to that experience. And so much of our practice is learning to peel away those layers of conditioning, of assumption, of idea, so we can directly connect with what is actually here, what's actually present. It's actually arising in our experience. Learning to see through our ideas, through our opinions, to see that actual thing itself. We could say this is learning to see what's actually true in this moment, you know, versus our ideas and concepts around it. Clearing the dust from our eyes. This is a phrase that when the Buddha was debating about whether to teach or not, someone spoke to him and said that there'll be people who there's not much dust in their eyes, meaning there's not much conditioning, not much ignorance, which is blinding them, and can actually see more clearly already. And your teaching will bear fruit. They will rejoice in that teaching. So what is this listening? You know, again, receiving something free of our unconscious distortions. Seeing something free of our unconscious distortions. I think sometimes our practice, meditation practice, is so simple, we overlook how profound it really is. You're learning to just connect with this breath, this body sensation. Like, okay, well, that's all there is to it. That makes my mind more calm, more collected. That's great. But that's really training us on how to take something like the breath and the body and start to release our layers of opinion or idea of concept around it. And that trains us to start to move into other areas, really around this sense of who we are, or identification, or sense of self, how we create the sense of other. And so in this way, we start to learn to receive something free of our unconscious distortions. And so we start to become conscious of our distortions, and we can see how that shapes our experience, shapes the way we actually see things. So learning to listen, true listening, is seeing through our biases, through our opinions. Because so often what we think is true is actually, what we think we is true is actually just an idea, just a thought. And I find it's best to assume that I'm always leading with those biases, those prejudices, those assumptions. And when I start to see that, then I can separate out from actually what's present. It's almost by recognizing it, making it conscious, that I can actually see what's here. This is part of this exploration we did last year on dependent origination. Remember the cycle of the link of nama rupa, of name and form, how we see something and we create a whole, we fix it in our perception based on our history, our past experience, our past actions around it. We're not relating to that actual thing, but really our the world we've created around it. So with listening, much of this, especially with communication, is learning to notice those deeper emotional pulls, that wanting approval, wanting to be good, wanting to be liked, and how that shapes how we shape our communication, how it changes the way we're actually presenting ourselves, how we're listening. And when those drop away, when you're able to simply connect with the other person, it's often very striking. Because in that striking, we're not so self-referenced. And what keeps us usually distanced and separate from the other person falls away. So we're simply receiving this other person. There's this wonder and delight that arises as this person manifests moment after moment. And we ourselves are feeling that arising and falling, rising and passing away. We really see the gift of receiving another person's experience as they dialogue with us. So this is this listening that we're really training in from day one as we first learn to meditate. So let's go back to those two elements I spoke of at the beginning. The first one, releasing opinions and position. How does this work with communication? How does it allow our communication to have that sense of aliveness, of undistortion, of that wiseness around it? So being truthful is an essential aspect of wise speech. So it's really fundamental in our speech not to lie. Recalling last time I shared that sutta where the Buddha's giving advice to his 7-year-old son, Rahula, and how if you tell a deliberate lie, it's like you're turning your whole spiritual life upside down. You're emptying it out, any benefit, any momentum that you have. That someone who's able to tell a deliberate lie without shame, there's no evil they're not capable of doing. So this is an important foundation piece. And in communication, sometimes we mistake our opinions and our position as the truth. you mistake our opinions and position as what's true. And this blocks us from truly listening, truly hearing, because we already know what is true. We don't need to hear it from another person. It's really hard to learn something you already know. You're no longer open to receiving another person, especially if they have a different opposing viewpoint from you. We're not able to fully hear, to listen, to receive. As the statesman Rumsfeld said a long time ago, you know, there's the known knowns and there's the known unknowns. And he also mentioned the unknown unknowns. I always found it striking because I think there's so many things that we think we know is true. And actually it's just an opinion, just an idea. And before we start to practice, we hold those opinions and ideas and thoughts as being really an expression of reality, of truth. When we start to practice, we realize this mind is very random. This pops up, this other thing pops up. This is so reactive. It's so conditioned on our history, our wounding. Learning to free that moment from our past history. So much of the practice. So releasing our opinions, our views, our beliefs, we start to realize that they are conditioned. They're not universal. Remember my teacher, Rodney Smith, once told me we're exploring this topic, and he said that, okay, think of it this way, that all thoughts are equally valid. Okay, so your thought and an opposing thought, the thought on the other side of the aisle, it's all equally valid. Or if you prefer, they're all equally invalid. And he was trying to point toward that way of disengaging my belief in my thinking mind, disengaging that absolute belief that my thought is true, and pointing toward an absolute experience of life, going into that quality of the emptiness, the mystery, the place beyond thought, beyond concept. This is hard to do in communication when we are really holding something as true. We all have those things we know deep down that we're right. Another person is wrong. You know, I'm sure this last few years, it's become even more polarized and divisive in our country, that we have people saying one thing, another person saying the exact opposite. And they both believe in their own opinions so strongly. So learning how to listen through that, to release that, even in the moment, so you can actually listen and hear. Realizing that releasing your opinion and your position isn't about action. It's about learning to listen in that moment. And then from there, a place of deeper wisdom arises that action can arise from. Because this, our relationship to thought and thinking, is kind of the sticking point around this whole quality of deep listening and really dharmic communication. Even more fundamentally than our relationship to thought is our fundamental relationship to the person who's having those thoughts. That sense of identification that forms around a thought, that I'm the one who's having this opinion, I'm the one who's having this position. So as meditators, we start to learn to hold these lightly, hold our thoughts more and more lightly. We start to release our opinions and our positions to allow communication to happen. We start to realize that, okay, what's true may be momentarily true in this moment for me, and the same thing with this other person, but not holding as this solid state that's denying this truth of impermanence. It's denying the truth of a non-self, that these things are arising and passing away. One author from a whole different field, he had a preface in his book. He says, okay, I'm going to say a lot of things, but I reserve the right to be wrong in the future. And all the stuff I'm going to say is right. I have the right to say in the future, okay, I actually was wrong. I learned, I grew, I changed my mind. So learning to listen with that internal sensation, internal sensation of our mind, of our body, and how that echoes what our mind is feeling. So we're kind of navigating this quality of releasing our opinions. Sometimes it feels like you're driving through those amusement parks where you have those rails going down the middle of the road, and you're trying to keep your tires over that. I remember as a kid, that was really challenging to try to do that until I actually learned to drive. And you feel it when you bump up against it. That bump is realizing, oh, okay, I'm caught in an opinion. I'm caught in something that I think is true. So we learn to listen to that contraction of idea, contraction of opinion. We also start to listen to our reactivity, you know, our hurts, our defensiveness. This way, the expression of truth is acknowledging, okay, this is what's actually here, that I feel triggered by this person. I feel defensive. I feel anger, sadness, fear toward this person around this situation. And this way, suddenly we freed up the whole process of communication. We're not denying what's present. We're not unconscious to it. Then we can respond to it. We can act with it instead of from it. We own our own biases, our wants, our desires. So this is when I became a father. So my daughter is almost 18 now. But early on, I noticed how being in that relationship as a parent really highlighted the quality of the Dharma in daily life. Because when you're a father or a mother or in any kind of role like this, you start to see that you have a lot of wants. You want this child to do well. You want them to succeed. You want them to make good choices. You also feel the whole momentum of your own upbringing, your own past history, all kind of projected on this little kid who's just trying to, you know, crawl across the floor or something. And so learning to recognize that, to be internally noticing where that contraction is, where that tightness is of control, of wanting, and then just acknowledging it, releasing that position, releasing that idea, so then that person can have their own experience. This is hard because so often we think we know best, you know, and it's I think one of the hardest things, I don't know if it's one of the hardest, but a challenging thing of being a parent is learning to let go. Learning to let go and let that child be their own person. And especially early on, you're so involved in their day-to-day activity. But when they get to be 17, 18, you know, it's time to let them have their own life, have their own lessons, their own growth. And so with communication, you track that. You feel that contraction. You feel that opinion, that belief, and you acknowledge it. And you speak from a different place. So this first section, this is kind of the half of the piece. It's learning to really release our opinions and our position. And it helps us to open to be able to truly listen, to truly receive what the other person is sharing. So it's actually a dialogue, a back and forth, grounded again in wise speech. The other aspect is to stay connected to our heart and our body, to stay connected to our heart and body. So this is really about connecting and listening and responding to what you sense. Really sensing, okay, what is happening in this heart and body, heart, mind, body, as I'm speaking, and not only just noticing it, but actually responding to it, making changes based on what you're feeling. So we'll unpack that quite a bit here. Because communication, I think especially when we start to get into all the particular, okay, all these different elements, we can go into our head. Okay, I have to make sure I'm speaking in a truthful way, beneficial way, in the right timing, non-divisive, non-abusive, non-idle. Okay, I kind of go into my mind how to think about that. Well, if you learn to focus instead on developing this intimacy with our own body, with our own heart, and it's an intimacy of connection, of relationship, a kind of exquisite sensitivity to what our body is experiencing as we're speaking, and maintaining that as we're speaking. And suddenly it gives this beautiful feedback mechanism that if we're saying something untrue, our heart and mind, our heart and body will register that. Our heart and body will resonate with that quality being untrue. Conversely, if we say something that's true, there's also the resonance. There's a way that we feel that, we recognize it, and our body gives this unbiased feedback, unbiased kind of a check and balance, a litmus test. The same thing if we're speaking something that's unkind, that has a harmful intent, the body will say so, reveal that. So what does this mean really in conversation in actual real life? I think it's sometimes we translate, okay, I'm meditating and I'm focusing just on each breath and feeling each sensation, and that's everything that I'm focusing on. We start to work with communication as a practice, as a spiritual practice. Just try to keep about 10 or 20% of your awareness in your body as you're speaking. And even as you're listening, as I'm speaking, I'm keeping awareness in my body just a little bit, 10 or 20% while I'm forming the words, while the words are flowing out. So sometimes we need to kind of up that ante or that ratio if we're feeling a quality being unsettled or ungrounded, really feeling the feet, feeling their belly, feeling our hara, so we can feel that sense of steadiness, of grounding. But a lot of the time, I like to just keep a kind of a receptive scan of the whole body, noticing what echoes in my body as I'm speaking or as I form the intention to speak. There's intention, that's the beautiful place to catch is when you feel that intention to speak, what's the body say? Same thing if I'm listening, how is that landing? What's the body saying? Feeling those little tugs, those little contractions, the little bit of easing of opening around, as the conversation weaves in and out through these sensitive areas. So the body is such a beautiful, again, a litmus test, a sense of information that's so rich. And again, it's really hard to, it doesn't lie to us. It doesn't lie to us. Even if we're disconnected from our body, even if we're disconnected, that in itself is that message. It's just, okay, where is the body right now? What is the body feeling? And as your sensitivity grows, sometimes you can feel this impact. Oh, I really felt this lie, this fib that I spoke. Or someone says something and there's that reaction. You feel it more and more with that sensitivity. That's why next month I'm going to explore boundaries as part of that. Because I think there's so many ways we need to explore that, to have that sense of integrity as we become more sensitive, that we don't become awash in that sensitivity. So the body, sensitivity as we're listening. And then there's the heart. It's starting to understand, what's the felt sense of the heart that's guarded, that's closed, that's contracted, and the felt sense of the heart that's open, that's receptive, that's actually able to be close and connected. It's not about changing it, but just noticing what's actually here and responding to it. If my heart is guarded and defended, if I feel hurt or angry, to know that. And notice how my communication may flow in a certain way from that. That may be much harder to have wise speech. It's much easier to lash out, to create harm, to compensate for my own inner harm. And pausing, noticing what's there. There's this process that Rodney taught me and my wife from before we got married on really a dialogue exercise, communication exercise. That his assignment was, okay, go spend some time together. And one person just starts to share what's going on. And they just share. And the other person's job is just to paraphrase and accurately respond to what's being said. So not responding, but actually saying, I hear you saying this. This is what you're saying. And the first person actually says, yeah, you got it right or you didn't. So very simple exercise. And then at some point you switch. So as we first started to do that, it was amazing how much unsaid hurts we had to share, we wanted to share, and to actually be received by the other person, to actually be heard by their person, and to know, yeah, you got it, or no, you didn't get it, it's actually this. And it actually helped to clarify what was going on. And it was, definitely took a long time at first to kind of get the backlog of what's not been said. But this is a process that we still use to this day, that when we get into those just relationship conflicts, those difficulties. And it's usually one of us is overstressed or both overstressed and feel like one person is doing the dishes more than the other person. It just kind of blows up into this thing, right? And sometimes when you're in the middle of that reaction, when I'm in that middle of the reaction, it's important to notice that. Say, if I keep speaking from this place, I'm going to cause more harm. To be willing to say, okay, let me come back. Let me take a little walk around the neighborhood. Let me talk to you in a few hours. And at some point, there's that willingness to shift, to let go of my opinions and my ideas, or her to let go of her opinions, enough to actually listen to each other, to actually go through our projections, to actually see who's this other person in front of us. And this has been such a beautiful and strengthening part of our relationship. But learning to recognize when the heart is closed and contracted and realizing, okay, what is needed here? Maybe I need a little space. Maybe I need a little time before I can have the courage to speak, to share, the courage to set aside my opinion, my thoughts, my belief, to really listen, to go back and forth. So in this way, as we start to really connect with our bodies and our hearts, we go back to those elements of wise speech, of truth, of being, of kindness, of non-harm, of something being meaningful. And when something's true, we're saying something that's truthful, that's connected with our heart and body, you know, what's true is really confirmed by our body. There's a sense of relaxing into that. There's a sense of, you know, often we take a spontaneous, deeper breath. We've aligned to that. Even if it may not be pleasant what we're saying, sometimes it's challenging. It takes a lot of courage to say what we want to say because we're afraid of being attacked or wounded or judged like so many other times in our past. When we have that, when if timing feels right, when there's that quality of, okay, I can say this, and we are able to say it, there's that quality of grounding, of settling. And, years ago, I used to do Aikido, and there's this one style that they talked about, weight on your side. So you imagine you're holding your arm up, and you usually we kind of walk around with our weight, our emphasis on the top part of our body, so we're kind of stiff. Weight on your side means to just imagine your weight going down to the lower parts of your all your limbs, all your body, and there's that sense of settling, like gravity can move more fully, clearly through your structure. When you speak what's true, your body does that. It follows into that alignment. The mind becomes stiller. The heart becomes more open and accessible. In contrast, if something's not true, the body also lets you know. You start to shift into tension. The breath becomes less easy, more constricted. It's tricky because we often lie to try to serve ourselves in some way. We don't want to be judged or blamed. We don't get in trouble. Or maybe you want to be rewarded or approved of. But all of that creates a level of turbulence in our minds. There's thoughts and justifications and ideas. We're not settled. We're not grounded. We feel the need to justify, to explain. When we speak what's true, there's really not much to say. It's clear. It settles. It's like, okay, that's what's true in this moment. Pointing toward how the body and the heart show that, reveal that. The same thing with kindness, with non-harm. Naturally, when we're connected to our bodies and hearts, we naturally tend to flow from that quality of kindness. We naturally have an intention for being beneficial in our words. We start to have a better sense of what's the right timing. We know our own tenderness, our own hurts, knowing our own timing and what's beneficial, when we need support, when we perhaps need a little time out. The same thing with meaning. Speaking of something that has a deeper meaning, it's naturally our hearts seek that. We start to really long for that. Even when you're just talking about something like the weather or how the Seahawks did or whatever it might be, you can have the superficial conversation, but underneath that, you can be connecting with this other person, saying, okay, there's this delight of connecting with that person, allowing yourself to be shared. So keeping in contact with this body and this heart as we're speaking, becoming sensitive to the dissonance that arises. Listen to it. That's all that's needed. So these two elements of releasing our opinions and our ideas that opens us to be able to really hear and listen, to actually see through our projections, our ideas. And then keeping that connection with our body and our heart allows us to have that real-time feedback as we're dialoguing, as we're hearing, as we're speaking with this other person. Years ago, David Zucker, who was a long-term member of this Sangha, he helped kind of set up the KM groups, the Kalyana Mitta groups, years ago. And I remember him holding a training. And he said that, okay, the way, if you're facilitating a KM group, the way to think about it is just the way you relate to your body and your mind, and you have that sense of noticing the breath, noticing the mind state. Now the group is your mind. The group is your body. And so in this way, the conversation, you hold that quality of holding conversation, how all this reactivity, the responsiveness, the internal experience is arising moment by moment. So it asks us to step back and at the same time step into our practice. This is why speech is a central part of the Eightfold Path. It's a central part of really embodying and living the wisdom of the Dharma, the wisdom of our practice, the wisdom that the Buddha taught. You know, our meditative practice cultivates that wisdom, the intention behind it, and then the action of it. How we speak, how we move in the world is such an essential part of this. Simply speaking from our heart and listening with your whole being. This is communication in the Dharma. All right, if we could just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, thank you for your kind attention. I'm going to talk a little bit about the homework for this week, and call it if you could share it with those online. Perfect. And those in the room, hopefully you got a copy of it. So this week, you know, bringing your attention to this back and forth flow of communication. You know, try not to be too stiff around it, too rule-based. Instead, really noticing this relationship between wise speech and true listening, particularly these two elements that we explore tonight. As you're speaking with another person and you're listening to another person, just notice as your opinions arise, the position that you're taking up, and just practice releasing that. Practice letting it go. You don't have to let it go forever. Just for that moment. It may be a very valuable opinion. It may be a very helpful opinion and position. And in the midst of the communication, be willing to set that aside. You know, maybe you state it, but at the same time, even as you speak it, there's still this releasing of it. And see how that releasing allows you to listen more deeply, to actually hear through your normal barriers of ideas, to actually make contact with that person. And also keeping contact with your body and your heart. Just like simply scanning the sensations. Literally scanning what's going on in this sensations of the body doesn't have to be anything mystical or magical. It just, oh, when I said this, I felt this contraction in the pit of my stomach. That's all I'm talking about. Or the sense of, oh, I spoke, something was challenging. I was afraid I was going to be judged, but I finally had the courage to say it. And there's a sense of, okay, I'm glad I finally said that. I finally was able to come clean or to share what was really important to me. Just notice how that feedback starts to maybe transform all your communication and see how they may help communication be truthful, based in kindness and non-harm, and also meaningful. All right, so next week we'll have do a recap of this talk and a chance to explore it in small groups. All right, so we have a chance to see what's on your mind around this topic, or you know, anything else around the Dharma, you're welcome to bring that up. And we have both the speaker here in the room and also online. So who would like to go? Anybody here online like to share first? You can raise your hand. Maybe raise your virtual hand if you know how to do that. I have no idea how to do it on this thing, actually, but or you could wave your hand. Anybody online have anything to share? All right, I'm not seeing anyone right now. Let's see if anyone in the room has anything they'd like to ask or explore. Okay, come on up, Perlito. All right, can you guys hear him online? No? A little bit? Hold it a little closer.
And then every time you use it,
okay. Still can't hear him.
They still can't hear.
Okay, well, let's do our best, and I can paraphrase.
Can you hear me? Okay. No.
So.
So weird.
Okay, we're just.
That just temporarily let go of the opinions, but still, if what those opinions are actually kind of your core values, then it seems like you're kind of at a loggerhead. I'm wondering where on that spectrum, and kind of how to deal with that. That if that is what's happening.
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can. If I captured, you know, what Carlito was saying, so I'll paraphrase it for those online. So just noticing how that sometimes there's a sense that when you're speaking really around your core values, your deepest held beliefs, there's a quality that resonates in the whole body. And is that kind of what we're talking about, letting go of those, but seem like that's kind of discounting who we really are? Is that kind of this? And so what you're,
yeah.
So when I'm talking about letting go of opinions and beliefs, it's really when you find that creates a sense of separation with the other person. So even let's say you have a, simple belief. Okay, let's say that you have a strong belief that, okay, global warming is something to be concerned about, right? So that's a strong belief that helps, you know, when you really voice that, when you really feel that, you feel that sense of integrity, you feel everything lined up. And you're talking to someone who says, no, that's all fake, or that's all, you know, opposite, okay? And so then, you know, so what do you do there? So you don't abandon what you know, that sense of integrity, but just kind of in some ways suspend your belief enough to be able to say, okay, tell me more about, you know, why you believe that. Let me understand that point of view. If you stay entrenched in your own point of view, you won't be able to hear that other person. There won't be that sense of dialogue back and forth. And by doing this, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, you're going to find that the body contracts, like, okay, I just can't do this anymore. you know, I just, you know, I've practiced this with a few people I know who are, have very opposite views of me, you know, different belief structures and different values. And so, but I'm in the relationship I'm with them, I'm one of offering service to them. So it's not really my place to like trying to convince them. So I can, you know, okay, I'm going to kind of set aside my own beliefs and listen more clearly. And it's interesting to hear more and more deeply where that comes from. Because for that person, it makes sense to them. You know, they have the same resonance that you have. It just you happen to have very different views on that. And so if we stay entrenched in our views, we won't have that quality of communication. And so it's learning to say, okay, I'm going to kind of listen through my views and opinions to be able to really hear this other person. And then, you know, you don't know where that's going to go. You may be able to, you know, have some insight of understanding their view more, and they may understand your view more, and it might be this way of kind of balancing. Or you might just say, well, that's, they're just too much apart. And you take the same example to something more interpersonal. You know, you just have someone who's, you know, someone you care about who's insulted you or caused some harm through their actions, you know, and you know you're hurt there. But can you set aside that hurt enough to really hear what was going on for them? Especially if there's someone who cares about you and didn't try to hurt you intentionally. But, you know, you feel that and you feel like they hurt you intentionally. So you learn to just kind of set that aside enough to really hear that other person. And hopefully they can hear you. And so that's kind of what I was kind of pointing toward, is when it creates that quality of separation in communication. You know, other times when you feel that sense of integrity through views, yeah, that's wonderful to feel that, to resonate with it. And at the same time, also hold that just a little bit lightly too. Because there's a point of feeling that resonance. It's kind of can become a slippery slope to becoming contracted around it. You know, becoming, you know, an ideology, a contraction of belief that's not flexible. Okay, thank you, Carlito. All right, so sorry about the technical difficulties. Anybody online like to share anything? Kathy, your audio is very distorted for some reason. Yeah, Kathy, I'm sorry. We have to come back. Why don't you type out your question and we can address it that way? Okay, that's interesting. Anyone? Okay, Sean and Bruce, go ahead.
Hi. So this kind of communication with another person is, in order for it to be effective, it's really got to be a two-way street, and of listening and tuning in. And what can you do when it's not going in that direction, where the other person, say, does not have a, and this is something that's happened to me recently, doesn't have a willingness to listen or have a heartfelt conversation, and has decided that they've just let it go, and they hope I let it go too. And then I feel, God, you know, I'm a really terrible Buddhist. I can't just like let this go. I really want to talk this through. And then you get to a stalemate, and that's uncomfortable. You know, that's a separation. The stalemate is a separation where you can't go any further. I don't know, just comments on that. If there's both people are not willing, hard.
Yes, yeah, it is very hard. You know, so part of it is learning to say, okay, what's, you know, maybe the timing. I'm trying to force the timing. And I think that's often what happens. And sometimes, you know, the other person may not want to speak because, you know, it's too intense for them. It's too charged for them, or they're too hurt. And sometimes actually kind of ignoring the elephant in the room can be skillful. Just say, okay, let me just talk about something that's not related to that, and be willing to just have that connection, almost like you're just speaking a little bit, to together. And then eventually that starts to maybe open a little bit into that. And it's, you know, it's the same thing about forgiveness, about letting go. Even if the person is no longer alive, it's still possible to learn to work through it, to let go and to work to see what's here. And what I would suggest is really doing that work on your, with yourself, is to maybe write it out. I think writing helps us take something that's kind of amorphous and put it down in a concrete way. You know, really what's my beliefs around this? What's my opinions around it? What's my emotions around it? What do I think is true? And just let yourself kind of look at that list and then question each one of those, you know, see that kind of the deeper meaning underneath that. Because times when I've been able to do that work with someone who's not willing to talk or able to access it by seeing for myself, my own side of it, which so much clarity, often that need to contact and talk with them and my own agenda falls away. And then paradoxically, then the conversation may spontaneously arise in some way. It may not be the shape or the form that you expect or want, but it may still arise. So it's, yeah, the fact of it is to have, we can still learn to listen deeply, even if the other person is not willing to speak with us. You know, that's ideal. And unfortunately, it's kind of rare to have someone who's willing to do that. It takes a lot of commitment in that relationship.
Well, I think you're right. I think it takes a certain amount of commitment to work through things that are uncomfortable when they come up in a friendship, to be honest about how you're feeling and be willing to listen to the other person. It does take a commitment to the friendship and the relationship, how much you value the relationship. Yeah. But I like your idea. I work more with myself, and just see what happens. Cause you can't force somebody to talk to you. You know, if they don't want to talk, they're not ready, or for whatever reason, that's what I need to let go of. You know, maybe not let go of what went on necessarily, but let go of my desire to work it through when it's just not possible now.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And also I think, it's helpful to kind of be the person who listens first, to invite the other person to share first. I think that's very helpful. Because if you want to unload what you're feeling about them and they're already reticent, it's going to be more so. But you say, you know, how that seemed like that was a difficult time. What was your experience there? Mm-hmm. You know, something really open-ended, gentle, and just give them a chance to see what comes up. And if you've done some of your own work around it, you'd be much more able to do that. Yeah. So good luck with that.
Thank you.
All right. Let me see if there's anyone else in the room, then we'll come back to you, Kathy. Here in the physical room. Yeah, Cheryl. Can you hear Cheryl? They say no.
Downstairs.
That's all right. We'll just do you want to use mine? That's fine.
On Sundays, during the Sunday sit, Tuwari, you know, talked about listening as well. And when we did breakout rooms, she wanted just two people in the room, and Kathy and I were together because we always go to the Sunday sit together. And so she let all the couples be together, put us in our own room. And so, you know, we were talking about listening, and Kathy and I have been really having, you know, she's my spouse. We've been really, really having some difficulties lately. And so got about, I don't know, 5 minutes in, and I was like, I got to go down and do the laundry. I couldn't stay. But later, we talked again, and it actually opened something up. We talked again later, And we have a dialogue started now. And I was able actually finally to share things that I thought I was protecting her from. And instead of just being all resentful, I wasn't sharing what I needed to share. And so we've actually started opening a real dialogue here, thanks to that.
Right, thank you, Cheryl. So y'all could hear that. Let me switch back my video. Trying to be too fancy, perhaps, but okay. Yeah, so that's a nice example of seeing how, and you know, the timing of things, and also the container too. Sometimes the container is not strong enough to hold the intensity, especially when there's a big backlog that builds up in long-term relationships. And you know, I know there's other situations with her health and all those things that make it very challenging and charged, and how hard you're working with Sims. There's all these factors. But, you know, you know, looking back, you did a skillful thing. You said, okay, hopefully you said it in a nice way. Okay, I need to take a break instead of, this, my wife always gets me a hard time because sometimes I just get up and leave instead of like, okay, I think I need to take a break. But the container of the relationship, as we're talking about with Sean, is that, you know, if that container is there, then there's that commitment to come back and to keep working it through. And then even though it's difficult, eventually that, you said some things you hadn't been able to say and be heard. I'm sure Kathy had a similar experience. Yeah. So keep working on that, you know, try that listening exercise of just saying, you know, Kathy, you start, you just speak and I'm going to try to paraphrase the best I can. You tell me if I got it right. And then after she's kind of talked out, then you get your chance. So you're not having to agree. You're just making sure you understand what she's saying. That's a really solid one. So thank you. All right. So let me get to Kathy and then Arubiku, and then we'll see if there's anyone, and then go back to Emery. All right. Let me just see what you said, Kathy. Okay. My question is about how edgy and opinionated our times feel to me with my own circle, family, and friends even. So when I'm communicating, it feels like I'm self-censoring rather than speaking at all. Yeah, we're coming up on Thanksgiving and, you know, holidays. I mean, who knows what will happen with COVID and how close gatherings will be. But yeah, families, it's like families have been split apart by, you know, some of the divisiveness and the opinions and the differences of what's factual, what's true. It's amazing how painful it can be. And so, yet sometimes it is the willingness to be with the people is more important than to express those opinions. You know, that saying, okay, I'm going to let's have a list of things we're not going to talk about and just agree to say, okay, we're not going to talk about politics or about vaccinations or COVID or whatever the charged issues are. And instead, enjoy yourself as people together. Because I think it's, you know, as we've been talking about, relationships get so charged and there's so much, it's not just you and the other person, that real-time meeting, there's all the history that you're bringing forth with that, all the backlog back to childhood and all this other stuff that's swirling around. And it's often we need a bigger container to be able to hold that, a more robust container, like some things we've talked about. You know, I think couples counseling, family counseling can all be very helpful, but it's definitely a challenging time. And, you know, coming back to that, okay, how can I speak from a place of kindness? You know, whichever one of those wise speech seemed the most challenging, focus on that, highlight that. Okay, where can I come from a place of kindness when this person who I'm so, you know, grew up with or my sibling or in-law seems so different to me, but there was that kindness. So I hope that helps, Kathy. I know you've been having trouble with computers, so still continuing. Okay, Nisabo, would you like to go?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, no dubstep. Let's see. Yeah, I, Tim, I really just appreciated the thing you were saying around, the importance of the right time, the container, and waiting. And, you know, it's built a bit into the Vinaya too, around, you know, we aren't allowed to admonish another monk unless we get their permission and speak from a heart of goodwill. And I think that led to Ajahn Amaro. I think he had to wait a whole year once before he had a heart of goodwill, before he admonished someone. So, you know, it's interesting and it's in there, but I'm curious about, you know, that dilemma brought up of what you do in the meantime, with your own practice and working with forgiveness. You pointed to it, and I mean, that's a huge one. So I'm curious. I mean, I know Ajahn Sona recommends if you can't spread metta to someone, you know, you spread it to their chair or something. But I'm curious what you found to be the one most, you know, there's an arsenal of things you can use to kind of put down that stuff. But what's the kind of the tool that you've really found has consistently been the best for you, if I can ask?
Sure. Thank you for asking that question. Yeah, and just to acknowledge the container that the monastics hold, and just the whole way that the way the interactions are, the way that that's part of that container, which is so powerful and so time tested for these 2,600 years. Now, for myself, oh, there you are. Sometimes it shifts around. For myself, the single biggest thing I find is that usually when I'm really charged and upset at somebody, I need to work with it enough internally so I can see actually how they're a placeholder for something else. Right. So typically it's family of origin stuff, that they're a placeholder for some wounding or something that happened, some basically belief structure that a strategy I created to make sense of the world. And that's usually unconscious. I'm not even aware of it. I'm just really angry at this person, or upset at this person, or triggered by this person. And learning to just turn toward that, meet that with as much compassion and steadiness as I can, feeling the emotionality, the beliefs, without any sense of trying to flinch with it, just to see it. At some point, when I really do that, then there's almost like this drop, like, oh, I see another element. It's like seeing almost an undercurrent. There's this turbulence on the surface of the water, but deep down, that's the current that's driving it all. I may be really angry, but that deeper current is one of sadness or of fear. And once I touch into that, then there's much less projection. Because otherwise, I'm asking the other person to try to solve my problem, my projection upon the world. They're just this, I'm putting them into this role as an actor in my play. And when I can realize, okay, I wrote the play and I'm acting it out, when that kind of clarity happens, then I realize that triggering that happens, and it may be a very, you know, specific thing that they did that they need to look at. But when I feel, okay, that's really resonating with this much deeper pain in me, when I connect with that, then I'm able to find that heart of goodwill, because I have found compassion for myself. So I hope that's helpful. Thank you. All right. So I saw Emery, and we have a few announcements. So let's go with you, Emery, and then I'll see if there's anyone here in the room, and then we'll have our announcements.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening.
Nice to see you.
Thank you so much. I'm coming in here from Portland. So I find that I am, when I intend to, I feel pretty able to set down my opinions or judgments or preconceptions and really listen to maybe my kid or someone I work with at work, either a coworker or a child, and just kind of really enter their reality and listen just with, it feels like there isn't anything between me and them and their perception. And it's lovely and feels very connected. And I'd like to remain there, except then what happens is this part of me that feels responsible for like doing the right thing or responding correctly or fixing, helping them fix the problem kicks in. And I'm like, whoa, like I totally was in that space with you, but now I have to step out of it so that I can figure out what to do. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that. Sometimes I feel ineffective if I enter too far in with, you know, let's just say my own kid. I'm like, wow, you know, I totally understand why it's so easy for you to procrastinate and you just really, like this essay is so overwhelming to you. Yeah, I totally get that. And then I'm like, wait a minute, you've got to write this essay if you want to go to college or, you know, whatever it is. So if you, I think maybe you get the idea. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a great articulation of that, that, you know, you can really connect with that, you know, the other person's perspective, but at some point you feel like you need to actually do something about it, to actually come forth and solve the problem. And what I find is really helpful and really in all my relationships, whether as a teacher, as a parent, as a spouse, or, you know, even as a friend, is to say, you know, to listen deeply and then ask the other person, so what do you think is, what do you want to do about it? You know, what's your idea about how to start there and let them actually come forth what they, because they're going to have some strategy or some idea around it. And also ask permission, like, do you want any ideas or suggestions around that? And as some of your roles, you are, you know, you have more responsibility. But still, you know, you can ask, you can lead with that. And then you can, you know, if they come up with an idea that really maybe you never thought of or it really resonates, it's so it's really empowering them. Because I think that's part of it, is that we can listen in a way that's, we're still kind of listening from a place of being better than, like, okay, I'm more knowledgeable, I'm more balanced, I'm more spiritual, I'm more professional, whatever it might be. And we think we know the right answer, but really let that person have a chance to voice it. You know, you listen, you're giving the gift of listening and you're giving them a chance to really connect with their own experience and then say, okay, from there, what should we do about it? What do you think what's some ideas and see what they come up with. And then, so it's more of a dialogue instead of you having to shift to being the problem solver. You actually are helping them, empowering them to solve it for themselves.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Austin, you want to come up here? Yeah, that's great.
I was on a flight, and the airline stewardess, when they came by and asked, do you have any remaining service items? They kind of did it, you know, nonchalantly, and I didn't have enough time to grab my service item and actually say, yeah, I do have it. But when it was time to land, that flight attendant walked by and was very detail-oriented, making sure that everybody's seat was up the way it needed to be. So I struggled a little bit. I kind of want to communicate directly that, hey, I noticed that there was a gap between how attentive to detail and caring you were when you needed all the seats, but when you rushed, but you kind of raced through the motions on collecting remaining service items. So I walked off the plane, and then I caught myself and I turned back around and I said, you know, I just want to give some feedback. And I told them what I just told you. And I really appreciated what you said earlier about having an intention of non-harming and kindness at the core. And that's what I did, as opposed to overanalyzing, should I say? Because one of the other things the Dharma teaches is the only ground I have to stand on is my own actions. How somebody interprets what I say, they may read it in a way that I didn't intend, but sometimes people think I'm looking at them a certain way, and I'm not. So I really appreciated you when you shared that earlier about not overanalyzing. If we have a core intention of kindness and non-harming, then we can communicate from that place and let it sit and land the way that it lands. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. Yeah, that's a great example.
So often we try to wait till the communication is just perfect, but I think it's, you know, times that I've, you know, been in a similar situation, I've just followed that impulse, like, okay, I'm just going to say it. It's, you know, much closer to the actual time that happened. There's a quality of clarity. And yeah, and was received well, you stayed grounded. And that's a beautiful example of the Dharma in action. So thanks for sharing that, Austin.